Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to the fifth episode of the Calcio Land Podcast. Despite our previous episodes, Alex, the producer, is still showing up. We still have guests willing to come on, so we must be doing something right. And that only happens thanks to your support. So I cannot tell you how much I appreciate all of you that are sharing what we do, that are leaving us reviews, which I cannot tell you enough how important they are for us. So thank you so much for tuning in to our show. So tonight we have a lot of exciting things going on. I'm in mourning. I'm wearing my Soundgarden t-shirt tonight. Chris Cornell, one of my idols, passed away at the end of the show. I'm going to pay tribute to him. If you're not interested in that, you can just log off after. We have the interview with our special guest, Nima Tavelli, who is going to give us some great insight into Inter. But before we get to that, you know, we're based here in Boston, and, you know, we lost to the Cavs significantly the other night, but overall it's been a great week for our Celtics. So, Alex, how excited were you on a scale of 1 to 10 that we landed the number one pick in the NBA draft?
20. And, well, excited is definitely one adjective you could use. Others could be flabbergasted, shocked, floored, and quite honestly, confused. Because, David, you know this, the Boston Celtics just don't get the number one pick. If you can remember all the way back to 1997, they had a chance to get Timmy Duncan, didn't happen. And then in 2007, they got porked again, had a chance to get Kevin Durant, didn't happen. Side note, things ended up working out pretty well. But bottom line, getting the number one pick is just not a feeling Boston Celtics fans are used to. So what makes it even better is the Celtics haven't had to tank. They've been reaping the benefits of the Brooklyn Nets' suckiness from the trade of Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett heading there. So it's just been really surprising these last, 48 hours, less than, to even think about the fact that now Danny Ainge knows where he would be picking. Now it's just all about, will he make a trade or not? So I'm super excited for the rest of the playoffs, but even more so for these upcoming weeks leading up to the draft, because it's truly a different and awesome feeling having the number one pick.
Excellent. So don't worry, guys. We're going to get to football very quickly, and you'll see why we started with this. So, you know, to me, I think it was karma that brought the Celtics the number one pick, because unlike other teams like the Phoenix Suns, who were blatantly trying to lose games to try to get the number one pick, the Celtics have been doing great with their team, but they did that great trade with the Nets when they sent Pierce and Garnett to Brooklyn for three number one picks. So to me, they deserved getting the number one pick because of the shrewd moves. So in Serie A, though, we've seen some teams who, in my opinion, have been flat out tanking to avoid being in the Europa League, unlike in the NBA where you get rewarded by playing poorly. You know, in Serie A, a lot of teams simply don't want to be in the Europa League. And I know a lot of you guys listening to this might think that, you know, this is a ridiculous conspiracy theory. And here I am, you know, in previous podcasts, we've run some segments on conspiracy theories that I've read on Twitter. And, you know, I made fun of them, but sometimes I have my own conspiracy theories. So, you know, I think, you know, I've seen a lot of teams, once they fell out of any chance of making the Champions League, the competition where you can really make a lot of money and it's very prestigious, we've seen Milan, Inter, Fiorentina, right after they were out of contention, they just seemed to go on really bad streaks. So I'm going to say, if you're a cynical person, you could just say, you know what, they just don't want to be in the Europa League. And there's a lot of reasons for this. For one, clubs like Milan and Inter can make so much money on summer tours, especially now that they have owners in China. They can just go play there, make tons of money. That's much easier than being in the Europa League. Having to play in those preliminary rounds of the Europa League, preparing for it, really wreaks havoc on your summer preparation. We saw Sassuolo, who made it to the Europa League. This season, they really, really struggled because of the fact that they had to play in it. In addition to that, this might seem really ridiculous to some of you, but the summer in Italy is just extremely hot. So if you have to start your summer preparation before, you just have to get ready in a lot of heat and play games in it. So I think there's a lot of reasons not to. Another one is, you know, in the Europa League, you are playing against teams in some really obscure places. You are planning trips to some places some clubs have never heard of. So I think there's a reason for some of these teams to tank. And I think you guys are going to enjoy hearing Nima's answer when I ask them about Inter and potentially tanking.
Well, so, David, two teams that definitely aren't tanking in Serie A are Roma and Napoli, who are only separated by a point. Why is second place so important?
You know, a lot of fans, and I'm especially Juve fans, love to make fun of Roma and Napoli, you know, if they celebrate making it to second place. But there really are good reasons for this. This is the last season in Serie A where being in second place brings you automatically to the group stage of the Champions League. Starting next season, it's going to be four spots. But if you think about it, just making it to the Champions League, you have a lot of guaranteed revenue. You get $50 million just for making it to the group stage. So if you finish second, you don't have to go through the preliminary round. And we've seen, I believe, the last three Serie A teams lost on the preliminary round, Napoli, Lazio, and Roma. So they did all this summer preparation early just to lose in that round. But if you make it automatically to second place, it also has a very good impact on your transfer market. I mentioned the revenues that you get from it. Last summer, Napoli, right after they clinched second place, they completed the deal right away for Empoli defender Lorenzo Tonelli, who on paper looked like a good move. It didn't really work out that great. Napoli, too, in the January window, once they got out of the group stage of the Champions League, they right away closed the deal for Pavoletti from Genoa. So there's really good reasons to try to make it to second place. So Juve fans can make fun of clubs having this ambition of finishing second. But for clubs like Napoli and Roma who don't have anywhere close to the revenues of Juve, that is really important. So, you know, I mentioned Napoli, and, you know, Alex, you're going to have to hold me back because I really want to go on a rant about this. People that follow me on Twitter know how much I love Napoli's coach, Maurizio Sarri. Two of our guests on the show, Matteo Bonetti and Carlo Garganese, also mentioned how much they enjoy watching Napoli. So I'm going to take offense and challenge all the people that make fun of Sarri for saying, okay, yeah, he plays this great football, but Napoli has nothing to show for it. To me, that's just ridiculous for a couple of reasons. For one, Sarri has only been at a club that can compete for trophies at Napoli for 2 years. So we're talking about a small sample size. And he's competing against a club like Juve, who, quite frankly, I think could challenge, win the title in almost any league in Europe right now. So to me, the fact that Sarri has no trophies has much more to do with Juve than it does to him. You know, it's very easy to say, oh, this team's not winning. Well, let's not forget that players on other teams get paid too, and players on Juve really know what they're doing. I'll tell you right now, as much as I love Conte and people make fun of me for my obsession with Conte, I'll tell you this, if Sarri coached Chelsea this season, I think he would have won the Premier League as well. I have no doubt if he was at Bayern Munich with Ancelotti, he'd easily win the league. And a better example is, I think if Sarri was at PSG instead of Emery, there's no way that Monaco would have won the league. So let's lay off Sarri. Let's just enjoy the beautiful football that Napoli plays. You want to make fun of him for lack of trophies? To me, that has a lot more to do with Juve than them. So, Alex, hold me back. I think I've had my blood pressure's going through the roof. So let's get to some great questions that we got from you guys on Twitter. If you want to send questions in for the podcast, please just use the Calcioland hashtag and we'll do our best to answer on the air.
All right, perfect. And yeah, I could tell the color of your face kind of changed there. So moving on, our first Twitter question, and I think you know I like this one, maybe not the team. Would Raja Nainggolan be a good signing for Manchester United?
Well, without a doubt, he'd be a great signing for any team. Never mind Manchester United. Just a superb player. I think, you know, if you look at Serie A as a whole the past 3 years, if you had to say, you know, who's been the best midfielder overall the past 3 years, if you said Nainggolan, really wouldn't argue too much with you. So he'd be a great signing for Manchester United, any club. But for him, you know, it's a little bit different. And we had my good friend John Solano on our second episode talking about Roma. And he addressed, you know, he talked a lot about Nainggolan. And what really stands out to me is, you know, his love and passion for the city of Rome. People in Rome, you know, have a very specific character and a way of doing things. And I think Nainggolan, like, fits into that perfectly. Loves the city, loves the weather there. His wife has a store in the city. You know, I think very often we forget that before being athletes, like, these guys are human beings as well. Just last summer, your team, Alex, Chelsea, made him a huge offer. He would have made a lot more money going there. And he turned it down. So, you know, it's possible that that changes this year. But I'd be surprised, especially now, because it looks like Roma has a good chance of finishing second. A player that could have potentially replaced Nainggolan very well is Frank Kessié, but he looks almost certainly heading to Milan. So I think there's less incentive for that, for him leaving, joining Manchester United or any club for that matter.
Mm. I mean, love the player, and to make it more of a tease, when Roma started playing the 3-4-3 and Nainggolan played the right forward, forget it. I can't even speak on it any longer. So let's move on. If Lukaku heads to Chelsea, would that increase AC Milan's chances of landing striker Alvaro Morata?
That's a great question. I appreciate the person that sent that in. So, you know, my boss, Di Marzio, had a report just the other day that it looks more and more likely that Lukaku is going to head to Chelsea. Diego Costa is going to cash in and go to China. I never blame anyone to go for the biggest offer, especially with short careers like footballers. So, you know, what's going to be interesting is seeing if Chelsea is going to want to get two big name strikers when, you know, they have other needs as well to try to increase the depth on the squad. I think what's really important for Morata is, with just 1 year before the World Cup, he's really going to want to play regularly. You know, Real Madrid's the club he grew up in. I think he'd only leave for a chance to play regularly, and it would be very expensive to get both Lukaku and Morata for Chelsea. Milan's very interested in him. If he went there, he would play right away. You know, he has a fiance. His fiance is Italian. Maybe there's a reason for him to go there as well. So it's going to be a very interesting situation that I'm very curious to see how it develops. I do think, in a way, though, it does help a little bit Milan that Chelsea seems so close to getting Lukaku.
All right. So speaking of AC Milan, will Roberto Mancini be managing AC Milan next season? And what do you think of the reported transfer moves so far?
I think the theme with Milan is trying to get everything set at the squad as early as possible. I'm a big fan of Galliani, their former director, who handled all their transfers. You know, he was known for the days of the Condor making, and the last few days of the transfer window, making all these moves. And that, to me, is really chaotic in a lot of ways. That was also not really his fault, in the sense that he really didn't have a transfer budget. So he was just trying to find the right fits at the last second on loans, free transfers, things like that. So I'm not going to bash Galliani for that, but it was a little bit chaotic trying to put the squad together at the last second. So I think Milan is trying to have some continuity. Mancini, you know, there's a lot of qualities that he would bring to the table, but continuity of keeping Montella, I think there's a lot of advantages to it. And Milan has had so many coaching changes since Allegri left without really any improvements, that I think what's much more important is improving the squad rather than the manager. So I'm fairly certain that Montella is going to stay put. And it's not surprising to me that Milan has been so aggressive in the early stages of the transfer window. As according to my boss, Di Marzio, who is really almost the Bible when it comes to transfers, they are set to sign Musacchio, Frank Kessié, Ricardo Rodriguez. Those are three quality players that are going to really bolster position of needs. So I think Milan's off to a very good start. I think they need to make a couple more moves to bolster, the squad. I think Milan Badez, who plays for Fiorentina, would be a nice move. We talked about Morata. I think if they don't sign him, they could go for Nikola Kalinic. I know a lot of fans aren't that excited about him, but that's a striker that plays very well in Montella's system. You can't just rate his contributions on goals. So let's say Milan, you know, to go with the three players, Musacchio, Rodriguez, and Kessie, adds Badelj and one out of Morata and Kalinic. I think you're going to see some big improvements, and I think there's a lot of advantages to having the squad ready when the summer preparation begins.
All right. Well, staying in Serie A, nice juicy question about the old lady. Do you think Moises Kean will be loaned out, or will he get some minutes next season at Juventus? And will Bonucci and my guy Alexandro stay or leave?
Great question. So for those that aren't that familiar with Moises Kean, like, he is a very exciting young striker, very highly rated prospect that's been on Juve's Primavera team. He's had a couple of minutes on the senior squad. And his agent is Mino Raiola, who, you know, he gets his clients what they want. So from what I'm hearing, there's a very good Raiola would love to send Kean on loan to a fairly big club, either in Belgium or Holland, where he's based out of, so he can get some experience at a big club rather than, say, a smaller club in Italy. That makes a lot of sense for me for Juve. They're first going to sign him to an extension through 2020, so they have him locked up, and then try to get him some game experience. I know Manchester City has been knocking on the door to sign him, but I think Raiola is going to keep him at Juve, but he'll almost certainly be on loan. Now, as far as Bonucci and Alexandro, I know this is going to surprise a lot of people, but I'm going to say that it's more likely, I think both of them are going to be at Juve moving forward. But if I had to say one of the two that could leave, this is going to surprise a lot of people, I would say more Bonucci. And the reason I say it is, if Juve wins Champions League final in Cardiff, that's a great way to go out. Pep Guardiola absolutely loves Bonucci. If Bonucci wins a Champions League with Juve, the idea of maybe playing for Guardiola and get paid a lot more would be pretty attractive to him. Juve is very deep at center back, so I'm not going to be shocked if that happens. You know, you put a gun to my head, and I think it's much more realistic that Bonucci stays, but between the two, I could see that more than Alexandro. Alexandro, you know, is going to be the next player that's going to get a big raise at Juve. I know Manchester City's always loved the guy, but I think they made a big mistake not pushing harder to sign him when he was at Porto with just 1 year left on his deal.
Wow. Okay, I didn't see that coming. All right, final Twitter question. Will Atalanta pull an Udinese from 2011 and 2013 and sell the whole squad? Mm-hmm. And what about Sassuolo?
This is a great question. You know, I think what's really important to understand is you can't apply the same standards for, like, top clubs to teams like Atalanta and Sassuolo. These are teams that are really more about developing young players, sell them for a profit, and start the cycle again. Udinese has done that a lot in recent years. Recently, they've gone more with a little bit more veteran players, but they still have a lot of young prospects. So I think you're going to see Atalanta sold Gagliardini to Inter in January. Kessie looks on his way to Milan. They're going to be able to hold on to Caldara, their excellent center back. He's already a Juve player that deal's official. He's going to stay there on loan one more season. He'll play all of next season at Atalanta. But they have a great manager, Gasperini, who just signed an extension to stay there for 3 more years. He's fantastic with young players. He used to be the manager for Juve's Primavera team, just does very well with young players. So I wouldn't even blame that much Atalanta for cashing in on a lot of the players. They still have a lot of quality on the squad. As far as Sassuolo, I think, you know, their fairy tale this season came crashing down a little bit. We talked about the downside of playing in the Europa League, and they really struggled because of it. Wouldn't shock me if they hold on to Berardi one more season, especially with the World Cup coming. But I think a new cycle is going to have to start there fairly soon. Their manager, Eusebio Di Francesco, you know, I could see him either at Fiorentina, Roma, or a club like that. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. So I want to give, I really want to thank all of you who have been sending in the questions. Please keep doing it with the Calcioland hashtag. I'll do my best for those that we didn't answer on the air to get back to you on Twitter. And now for my favorite part of the podcast, which is the interview. By now, you guys know the format. We talk a little bit about what's going on the pitch. And then for all those that are interested in learning more about journalism, blogging, and all that great stuff, we're going to talk to our guest who's going to share some great tips about that. So today we're joined by my really good friend, Nima Tavalli, who is the founder and runs the Sempre Inter website. He's a correspondent for Goal.com, works with Carlo Garganese, who we had on last week, and is a frequent guest on Stadio Serie A, which is a very good radio show podcast based in Canada. So, Nima, I'm thrilled to have you on, my friend. Welcome to Calcioland.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
A real pleasure. So, you know, Nima, I've been writing about Serie A quite a bit in the past few years. And I have to say, for a lot of reasons, I find Inter as a team that always gives you great talking points, a lot of things to talk about, good or bad. I think it's probably one of the most fun teams to write. Now, you know, I don't have a stake in the club like you. So for me, it's probably a little bit more fun. So, you know, tell us in general what it's been like for you in the past few years, your experience covering Inter and just being an Inter fan.
Well, I think tonight, just as we're recording this, it's a Thursday night. And just a few hours ago, Piero Ausilio just went all out attack and from nowhere and basically took he criticized everything and everyone at the club from nowhere. I think that is the best example of how it's been these past few years being an Inter fan or covering Inter, because when you least expect it, you know, lightning comes flying in from a clear blue sky. it's basically been an earthquake, mostly for the bad part, to be perfectly honest with you. It's been chaos.
Absolutely. So, you know, Nima, in the first part of the show, we talked a little bit about tanking in Serie A. And for those, you know, you probably know what this is. You know, teams in the NBA like losing on purpose to get a better player in the draft. And with Serie A, you know, it's a little bit different. I think the Europa League, you know, there's some advantages. There's also a lot of disadvantages competing in the Europa League. Do you think there's any chance that Inter, once they saw that they had no chance of making the Champions League, because that's really when it seemed to me that the performances just really dipped substantially. Do you think there's any chance that the club and the players just decided, you know what, we don't want to be in the Europa League, we're going to tank the last few games of the season?
I think that if one would like to make the argument that these players have been losing on purpose, is giving these guys too much credit, because they're just not good enough when they feel that they've got nothing to play for. Suning, we know for a fact that they want to play in the Europa League. They want to play in Europe at least. So I don't think it's from the club's perspective. However, the players, it's quite evident to say that these guys are mentally on holiday already. They just don't care. We saw that against Sassuolo. We saw that against Fiorentina. They just don't care anymore. And that's the feeling I saw. Whether or not that's on purpose to avoid the Europa League or not, I don't know. Maybe from the players' perspective, but certainly not from the club. Because Suning have been crystal clear. They want to play in Europe next season. And I think that's the reason why they decided to sack Pioli as well, because they realized that that was not going to happen.
Absolutely. Now, very interesting. You know, it's possible that there's a disconnect where one group wants one thing and the players another. So, you know, I think for Inter, you know, from where I'm standing, I see a lot of talent on the team. For me, you know, you can make an argument that they're at worst the fourth team in Serie A with the most talent after Juve, Roma, and Napoli. For whatever reason, they just haven't been able to get the most out of the talent there. So, you know, obviously, I think appointing the right coach is probably more important than adding more talented players. So we've seen Inter linked to so many different managers, from Conte to Simeone to Pochettino recently, Luciano Spalletti, of course. So where do you see the coaching situation at Inter going? And if you had to bet, who's going to be managing Inter on the first game of the season coming up?
Well, if you'd asked me an hour or 3 hours ago, because things go fast with Inter, I would have bet all my money on Spalletti. Because given the Sabatini appointment as the CEO of Sunin Sports, he's seen, and also the kind of football he plays, and also he knows the league, and he's never really tanked in the Serie A. I would have bet on Spalletti taking over. But given the information that has come out tonight with the Pepe and also above all Di Maria being on the verge of signing for Inter, these are all Jorge Mendes players, the super Portuguese super agent. He's also, as far as I'm aware, the agent of Jardim at Monaco. So I would say that it's either Spalletti or Jardim, but I would still put my money on Spalletti.
Very interesting. So you mentioned Walter Sabatini, and you know that's very interesting that he joined Inter. For our listeners that aren't maybe that familiar with Serie A, for one, I thank you for listening and trying to learn more about the league. Walter Sabatini was the sporting director at Roma for the past few years. I think overall he did an excellent job, especially with finding talents, selling them to for a big profit. So he recently joined Inter as a position as a technical director, kind of a liaison between the clubs, overseeing everything going on, not just at Inter, but at Suning's club in China. So we've seen Inter spend a lot last summer. Net of sales, they outspent Juve considerably on just three players, Candreva, João Mário, and Gabigol. They spent around 90 million. So we know the money is there, especially now that the financial fair play restrictions have been lifted. But maybe they haven't been signing the right players. Do you think Sabatini is going to be able to help Inter identify the right targets to improve?
Absolutely. I think if anything Sabatini has proven in his time at Lazio, at Palermo, at Roma, is that he has this incredible talent for finding young, not-so-famous players that suit and fit the bill perfectly at the club he's at. And I agree 100% that the problem with Inter is kind of what you said before, that there's a disconnect between different groups within the club, and that is certainly true of Inter. And now, to me, seems to finally have decided which way to go with Sabatini, and therefore I think that he will be able to help Inter a lot this transfer window. My only critique of him is that aside from Benatia and Marquinhos, he hasn't always been that good at signing or finding good central defenders. But I think that that's something that I think kind of also belongs to the past. I think that he, as the CEO of football for both Jiangsu and Inter, will be able to strengthen Inter's team considerably without maybe breaking the bank too much.
Excellent. Very interesting. So, you know, you mentioned the defense at Inter and Sabatini. You know, you mentioned the fact that Sabatini has struggled a little bit with center backs. And where I'm looking, from where I'm standing with Inter, you know, I thought Murillo was fantastic first half of the season. He was at Inter. I thought Miranda was very good overall his first season. Now, both their performances have really dipped. On paper, I really liked the signing of Ansaldi, but that turned out to be an absolute disaster, especially because they lost Laxalt as part of the deal. What do you see Inter doing to try to improve the defense this summer?
Well, above all, they have to buy new central defenders and fullbacks. I mean, the fullback situation has been Inter's Achilles heel for the past, well, pretty much since the days of Kivu and Maicon and Maxwell. And that situation has not been addressed in any shape, size, or form. I mean, if you look at the players that Inter have come in, such as Jonathan and Nagatomo and even D'Ambrosio, who some people at the club want to maintain has turned out to be a quality player. I think that if you want to fight for the Scudetto and subsequently also fight for the Champions League, D'Ambrosio is at best a squad player, rotation player. You do not build your team around that guy or that quality of player. So for me, I think the fullback situation is incredibly important, and that needs to be addressed first and foremost. And then also the central defenders, because as you said, Murillo has had a horrible season, especially the second part of it, and Miranda you just don't recognize him anymore. Mm-hmm. So they need to buy one or two central defenders and definitely two fullbacks.
Absolutely. Okay, so a couple more questions on Inter before we get into your career in journalism. And I know you have some great tips to share for all our aspiring bloggers. So, you know, I consider Mauro Icardi really a great center forward. Despite Inter never really being a contender for the Scudetto or even making it to the Champions League, his scoring average is really, really impressive. I think he's expanded his game and has had a lot of assists. But, you know, there are some questions about Icardi as a leader and all. You know, we've seen Inter have historically some great captains, Zanetti recently, but even before then, a lot of great leaders as well. How do you kind of see Icardi as the team's captain? Do you think that's a good thing? Do you think he can grow in the role, or are people just making too much out of the supposed character issues?
I think they're making too much out of the supposed character issues because, you know, I don't even want to get into that Wanda situation because I'm sick and tired of talking and hearing about it, because that's his personal life. They're married, they have kids, and deal with it. When it comes to him as a captain, I gotta say that he's been at Inter during the most difficult period and the most unstable and chaotic period in modern times of the club's history. And he's, despite all of this, he scored 78 goals in 146 games. That's quality. And the guy is still 24 years old. Whether or not he's a good captain, I just don't see anybody else in that squad that I feel could take the captain's armband and do a good job with it. I think that he's done the best that he could do. I really rate him. I mean, he's not the kind of guy that would dribble 8-9 players and then back heel it into the net, but he's lethal. You know, his stats are just insane. He scores on with something like his third touch of the ball. That's insane. And the guy has not had, you know, you have Icardi, you need to have players that can deliver and feed him the ball. And he's not had that until this season, pretty much, with Perisic and Candreva, who, despite a very disappointing season due to his inconsistency, has still managed to get 10 assists, because Icardi is that good. He really is a poacher. So I rate him, and I think that if he were to stay, I would love to keep him for another year or two before shipping him off. I hope he stays. That's my opinion.
Yeah, and you know, I agree with you about the personal stuff. Like, for me, you know, these guys are athletes. They aren't political leaders. They aren't religious leaders. Like, you know, enough of off the pitch. You know, it really isn't that important to me as well. And, you know, as far as his quality, it's pretty obvious. And, you know, a lot of times people forget that these are human beings before they're athletes. He has a lot of reasons to want to stay in Milano. So I'm with you. I don't see him leaving anytime soon either. He certainly had opportunities in the past. So I'm with you. I think he's going
to
stay.
I got to tell you one thing. Sorry to interrupt you. It's just that, you know, as you know, obviously working for the big man, Di Marzio himself, he's got this transfer, he's got this minimum transfer fee clause, which they negotiated last summer, that's only active for the first 2 weeks of July, and only to foreign clubs, of 110 million euros. Now, if a Real Madrid or a Barcelona or a PSG or a Chelsea, you know, if in fantasy land, if they want to break the bank and offer 110 million euros, Inter won't be able to do anything. The ball will pass to Icardi for him to decide. Now, whether or not he will leave then, then I think it could happen that he leaves. But unless there's someone, you know, a big club like that, I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I have to tell you, all things considered, when we're seeing some of the transfer fees being paid in England and just in general, to me, that transfer fee doesn't even seem that crazy, to be honest. I mean, he's like you said, he's 24 years old, really proven on a team that hasn't even done that well. I mean, to me, you put him on a club like Manchester United, I don't even imagine how many goals he scored. So before we get to journalism and what you've been doing at Sempre Inter, I want to give some red meat to our Premier League fans listening. So Ivan Perisic is a player that has been linked to Chelsea in the past, been linked to Manchester United more recently. To me, very impressive. I remember watching him play for Croatia, and he really stood out to me. You know, with Inter, you know, he goes a little bit up and down, but when he's on, he's absolutely devastating. So where do you see Perisic's future going? And, you know, God forbid he were to leave Inter, which to me would be a loss for Serie A as well. Do you see him as someone who could do well, say, in the Premier League?
I think that, first of all, I think that given his age and based on what he said before, and the fact that he's only got a 2-year contract left with Inter, I think it's almost a certainty that he will leave Inter this summer. And I think that the clubs that I personally think that are closest to signing him is either Man United, Paris Saint-Germain, and Chelsea, because I think he's the kind of player that would, in my opinion, whip it apart in the Premier League. He's a pacey player. He's fast. His finishing is good. He's a tempo player, and that suits, I think, both Mourinho and Conte in the Premier League. And also, given how PSG have given signs that they want to part ways with Angel Di Maria, I mean, who would be a better replacement for Di Maria than Perisic?
Great point. Excellent. Okay, Nima. So now this is probably, you know, what I enjoy the most is talking a little bit more about your career. And, you know, one thing that we try to do here that's a little bit different than other podcasts is give some real life tips to a lot of the people listening who are writers and are trying to break into the field. So, you know, I've been reading Sempre Inter for quite some time. This is even before I got to know you. So tell me a little bit and tell all our listeners too, what prompted you to found Sempre Inter, and tell us a little bit about the growth of the site and what things you think have really helped to make the site grow and become as big as it is right now.
Well, the reason why I started Sempre Inter was simply because of the fact that growing up, you know, you and I age wise aren't that far apart. I remember last week you were talking about finding 2-day-old Gazzetta dello Sport to catch up on the latest news. That was very, very vivid for me growing up here in Sweden when there was nothing about Inter. This was even before the internet, and that's how old we are. But so basically the idea was to do something that was lacking when I was growing up, and that is basically to create a site that was a hub, that was basically a portal about all things Inter, everything that the Italian press came, published and stated, interviews, everything translated to English, so that Inter fans such as myself could, when they were, you know, growing up, they could follow the club much more closely than I could when I was a kid. So that's how it all started. What really got the site going is, first of all, it was thanks to people like yourself who kept retweeting and sharing and saying, you know, good things about us. But there are two things, or especially one thing, that really got the site to explode. And that was, as you remember, the Guarin Gate, as we called it, that situation. That was my big break and the site's big break, where we basically broke the news that Eric Tohir had decided to pull the plug on the swap transfer between Vucinic and Guarin. And we were the first to break that news. And that was my big break on a personal level. But that was also the site's big break.
Yeah, I remember that very well. For the listeners that maybe aren't that familiar, it was a January transfer window, a potential swap between Juve and Inter, who, you know, that's as big a rivalry as there is in Italy. with Vucinic heading over to Inter and Guarin to Juve. They even took medicals and everything, and then nothing came out of it. So, yeah, very interesting, and you guys did really great work with that. So, speaking of that, you also contribute to Goal.com. We had Carlo Garganese on last week, who was tremendous, and you're doing a really good job of following up on him, because that's not easy, because he was really great. So you've been reporting some very interesting exclusive stories for Goal.com. You know, we're not going to ask you who your sources are or any of that stuff, but tell us a little bit about how you go about, you know, breaking news on his site.
Well, basically, it's, you know, I got to thank you there for bringing me on, DiMarzio, because maybe a lot of your listeners don't know how you and I know each other. We started working together on a site maybe four or five years ago that no longer exists. And then you started the DiMarzio gig, and then you brought me on to help you out. And, you know, just watching and learning how things work, and then, you know, and then kind of building up your own, you know, network, and then also, you know, learning that in this business, because I think Gianluca has basically revolutionized this business in the sense that he's so incredibly meticulous, in the sense that he finds stuff out, he's not trigger happy, he waits until he gets it confirmed, and then he goes full on. And that's basically how what I try to do as well, is that, you know, the most important thing, in my opinion, is to be sure about what you're publishing, to be able to stand behind it 110% and not just publish stuff out and you know, just shoot stuff out just for the sake of clicks and you know, quick fame. It's a hard work, as you know, and I'm not in any shape, size, or form comparing myself to Gianluca. I'm not even a tiny little drop on the water compared to him. But watching how he works, how you work, how everyone else in the business works, having the humility to listen when you've got people who are much more experienced than yourself. And then just basically building your network and being, you know, open and listen and try to get things verified. So that's how it works.
Absolutely. And you made a lot of really good points there. And look, you know, it's great to always be first, but if you're not going to be right, it really doesn't matter, because you're just going to lose credibility in the long run.
Absolutely.
So no, absolutely. Really excellent insight there. So let's close it with this question. So, you know, I'm sure at Sempre Inter, you've been there for a while. You've had a lot of different writers, different levels, different qualities. So tell us a little bit about the qualities that your best writers on the site have, and, you know, what advice you would give to anyone who's getting started in this business or who is thinking of getting started in this business.
Well, I think the best qualities, I think I can answer both of those questions with the same answer, in the sense that our best writers are the ones that basically, you know, when it's not fun, when it's difficult, when you're tired, when you've been working your day job, and when you just keep on working, and consistency for a long time, and you know, just not, never being, I know it might sound a bit crazy, but just never being happy and satisfied. You know what I mean? You got to have that hunger. You got to have that work ethic, hunger, you know, devotion. And also, you got to be lucky as well. I mean, I'm not going to be a hypocrite. I mean, I've been very lucky. I've been very lucky to have been able to work with you, to work with Carlo Garganese, to be able to work with FC Inter News and all those guys. I've been very, very lucky and blessed to have been given those opportunities. But it's also about, once you're given those opportunities, to kind of capitalize on it and work really hard and consistently and just keep on going, you know, just keep on going. Even when it's, you know, you and I, January, for example, or August, when we're absolutely mentally drained, you know, it's not fun to wake up in the morning and start writing. But if you keep on doing, just keep on doing it, keep on doing it, it will, you will see reward.
I completely agree. And look, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, and, you know, updating the site sometime with like boring stuff isn't easy. But I always tell myself there's someone out there that would kill to trade spots with me, and I have to respect that. And there's always going to be someone who's willing to outwork me. It can be good or bad, but I can't let anyone outwork me. And I think that's, in a lot of ways, really the secret. So listen, Nima, this has been a great segment, and I put a lot of pressure on you following up Carlo. I think you did really, really well. He's going to be very impressed too. So I want to thank you for joining us. Is there anything you want to plug or anything you want to say before we let you go?
Yeah. First of all, I want to thank you for all the support for not just for what you've done supporting Semperinta and myself, but also everything you do for the English-speaking culture community worldwide, because you have a very positive and inclusive attitude towards that, which I think is very commendable, because not a lot of people have that. And also, I'd like to say that, you know, we're at a stage at Semperinta where we're going to release our new homepage within the next 2 weeks. It's a complete update. We've already released our new logo, so we're basically it's like Semperinta 2.0, and we're really, really proud, and we've worked really, really hard to get this out, and within the next 2 weeks, we should get it out.
Fantastic. So I know you guys do great work. You know, I'm going to wish that Inter gives you a lot of great things to write about in the next season. Because, you know, beyond just the Inter, like, we need a strong rival to Juve and Serie A. So best of luck to you on the site. I mean, I know you guys are going to keep doing great work. So let's just hope Inter gives you a lot of good, positive things to write. So thanks again, Nima, for joining. It was really a pleasure to have you on, brother. Okay?
It was a pleasure. It was all mine, David. And keep up the great work.
All right. Thanks, Nima. All right, so I really enjoyed interviewing my friend Nima on a more, you know, sad note, because it really is. So, you know, this morning I woke up, and one of the first things I do as I make my morning double espresso is open Twitter, see what's going on. And someone sent me this tweet on Chris Cornell. For those of you that are still listening and don't know who he is, God bless you. But he was the lead singer for Soundgarden, Audioslave, Temple of the Dog. This guy sent me this tweet that Chris Cornell had died, and I was absolutely shocked. I was hoping it was a fake tweet, but I saw it was from BBC, did quick research, and unfortunately, it was true. And that, you know, to me, this felt like a part of my youth died with him. You know, I've been going to a ton of shows. If you follow me on Twitter, I think you realize that I'm a failed music critic who's pretending to be a football pundit, a columnist, but that's really my love is music. And the first concert I ever attended to was like back in 91. I was still living in Italy. I went to Torino to see Guns N' Roses, who was my favorite band at the time. And they had two opening acts, Faith No More, a band that I've loved ever since. And the first band that came on stage was Soundgarden. I knew a little bit about them. You know, this was well before YouTube, well before you could get a lot of information on bands. You had to, like, buy CDs. So I did some research on Soundgarden, and I knew a little bit about them. And Chris Cornell walked on stage with like this long, beautiful hair, looked like Jesus Christ, and he was like screaming like a maniac. And, you know, ever since, he's been like a huge part of my life. You know, what I love about music is, to me, they become like bookmarks in your life. Like, you can listen to a song and it's going to bring you right back to a moment of your youth. And that's something that you just really don't get elsewhere. And Cornell was such a huge part of that. Today, you know, when I heard the news, you know, it made me think that, you know, I'm very grateful that I brought my wife to see him play here in Boston at the Orpheum. And I told her, hey, you know, this guy has an amazing voice. You're going to be blown away. And she was. And, you know, it's a quick story. It was really funny that, you know, we were in seats in the balcony in the first row, and we were sitting down, and he was kind of like looking at us, and he goes, oh, all these fans that are standing up during the songs, it's great. And then he looks at me, and then there's fans that are sitting down, and that's okay too. And, you know, I got a good laugh out of that today. And then I brought my young cousin, who's a big rock fan, to see Soundgarden, and he was blown away. So I try to think about that today too. But, you know, I'm very sad because it's just been a huge soundtrack to my life. You know, you hear a lot about super groups and whatnot, and a lot of the times it's just guys from Queen of the Stone Age playing with some random guys. But to me, if you had Chris Cornell in your band, you were a super group. Temple of the Dog in the early 90s to me was like the first super group I followed. And of course, Audio Slave with the guys from Rage Against the Machine with Chris. And, you know, it really hit me like a ton of bricks. So I want to close the podcast by just saying that the title of the first song on Temple of the Dog, only album, is called Say Hello to Heaven. So Chris, please do that for us. And I want to thank all of you for listening.